Welcome to today's JNEB webinar. The Journal of Nutrition Education and Behavior is glad that you're joining us for a presentation today. It's also the first webinar of the new year for the Society for Nutrition Education and Behavior. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm the Executive Director of SNEB, and I'll do our housekeeping to get us started today. If you look in the GoToWebinar tool panel, there is a handout, which are the slides for today's presentation. So you are encouraged to download those and follow along with the presentation. We will have lots of time for Q&A. So please type any questions in the question block so we can moderate those to our presenters. When I close out the webinar today, there'll be a short survey. We appreciate your feedback on this session as well as any ideas for future topics. And then watch for an email, I would suspect before the end of the week, with a link to the recording, the handout, as well as the CEU certificate that you're earning for your attendance today. So I will turn things over to our moderator. Dr. Susan Johnson is a Senior Associate Editor for the Journal of Nutrition Education and Behavior.
Good morning, good morning for me, for everybody. Good afternoon to many of you. And actually, for somebody in the UK who's joined us, I think it's maybe even good evening or approaching that. We are delighted today to have three great people to talk to us about how to go about creating a graphical abstract. And you might be wondering, okay, so why did we decide to go this direction for our first webinar? It's because JNEB is in the process of creating guidelines for having the possibility to submit graphical abstracts with each research article and research paper. So we thought it'd be a great idea to hear from some people with a lot of game who can tell us their experience in creating such abstracts. There are three people who are going to be presenting to you today. The first is Sarah Borengasser, who you see on the slide here, who is an assistant professor in the Department of Pediatrics in the section of nutrition at the CU Anschutz Medical Campus. Yes, that's a mouthful. The second is Ramon Lorca, who's an instructor in the Department of OBGYN at the same university, CU Anschutz Medical Center. And the third is Jenny Nera, who is a graphic designer and the co-founder and creative director at Keeman Design for Research. She's a full-time designer of things like graphical abstracts, figures for papers, as well as logos. And having personally engaged with all these folks in this process, I can tell you you're going to learn a lot about this today. I'm going to hand it over to the presenters, and we're off and running.
Well, thank you, Susan, for the kind introductions. Today, our presentation will last about 20 to 25 minutes. We will not be taking questions during our presentation, but we'll be happy to answer any of them during the Q&A, which you can just pose in the question option on the GoWebinar function. And so our agenda will include providing information on various resources that you can use that are free, commercially available, or how to work with a design team. We'll also have a decision tree that'll help you decide what exact your needs are and which route you may want to go with. We'll provide recommended guidelines for authors, and then we'll move right into the Q&A session. So we'll start with just sharing some free softwares and tools that are available to you. So there are resources such as PowerPoint, Keynote for Mac users, Inkscape, and GIMP, which are all free graphic softwares to create visuals such as graphical abstracts. Then there's also other free tools that you can use in PowerPoint, the Noun Project, or Flaticon, where they offer free searchable icons that you can use in creating your graphical abstract. For example, I study pregnant women and children, so I often in PowerPoint will search icons for a pregnant woman, like a silhouette of a pregnant woman or a cartoon or silhouette of a child, and I can copy and paste those into whatever software I'm using. So some of the pros of these free software and tools are that they do offer decent quality graphics and icons that you can use. Sometimes there's copyright issues, especially if you're using something like Google Images to search for your graphics. But often including like Noun Project or Flaticon. You can use their icons or images for free, or you may be asked to attribute the author or designer in lieu of paying a fee. Some of the cons include there could be small fees. You may be asked to pay $1 to $3 per icon, or if you know you're creating a lot of visuals, you can pay a monthly fee to have access to all of the icons. For the graphic design softwares, there is a learning curve to be able to use Inkscape or GIMP or even PowerPoint. So just take that into account. Creating a graphical abstract can be labor-intensive, and some of these icons or images may not be specific to your research. For example, I study DNA methylation, and so I can easily find in PowerPoint icons a DNA methylation strand, but a methylated DNA methylation strand is not available to me. So I usually have to by hand or manually add methyl groups to this strand, and it's not necessarily hard. It just takes some time to customize it.
Well, about that, so we have some commercially available software, and we put like two examples here. One is, you know, a really famous one is Adobe. They have like different kind of programs. So you can find like Illustrator, Photoshop, Acrobat, and more than 10 programs with that. But is the other one specific for scientists is BioRender. So they have like already set up images, so you can buy it. And it's really helpful, but it's not something personal to your own creative design for you exactly like your specific project. So the pros on that is if you use like something, you buy a program, is the higher quality graphics and icons you can have. So every time it's like good resolution on your images, if you go like resizes or use it like a poster, for example, it's no copyright issues in that. So if you create it over there, is your job, like your work, specific just for you, so that's great. And they also is specific for your research, so you can use it and use like certain patterns and use certain colors for that too. And the cons on that is the learning curve to use, because you need to, if you pay for those, you need to spend like ton of hours to learning first, and then it's gonna be the labor you need to put on that. So it's like you need to create your own figures, basically. And the other thing is the monthly fees are in between 20 and 35. But I can tell you Adobe is really expensive sometimes. It depends what program you're going to use, for example, or if you want like buy the whole package, if you do more than figures or like webs.
Well, another option that we wanted to highlight during this presentation is working with a professional team. Many journals nowadays, they have a professional design team that they can, you can make figures with them for a fee. The good thing about like a working with a professional design team is that you will get very high quality of graphics. You don't have copyright issues similar to what we Jenny mentioned about the commercial available software. The major pro, I will say, saves you time because you don't need to make your own figures. And also there's a good professional consultation and research specific feature of working with a design team. Especially those that are focused on research. The final pro that we can highlight is that these professional teams can help you to visualize your idea or results, and we will go more in detail of about that in the next slides. Some cons are, of course, the costs. It will depend on the turnaround time, the complexity of the figure or abstract, the number of corrections that you are planning to do. Another and mostly like also the depending on the journal, they will have like a different costs. And the other con that we found is that if you decide to work with a team of graphic designers, but they don't have a scientist among them, you will have to provide very clear concepts and basically translate your science into graphic design language, which are very, very different languages. So just to keep in mind that if you want to work with a graphic designer team that doesn't provide scientific consultations, then you will have to have your ideas very clear.
So now we really want to highlight the process of creating a graphical abstract. And just to really drive home that the primary goal of a graphical abstract is to enhance the understanding of your key findings. A graphical abstract should really make the text more understandable and drive home the key takeaway messages. So this is actually a draft. I'm the client. So this is actually a draft that I created. And so I was the senior author on a paper. I was working with our first author. Her name was Janet. And our goal was really to convey that each the epigenome, metabolome, and microbiome, were working with each other, not in isolation, and can serve as valuable predictors of clinical responses to a weight loss intervention. We wanted to highlight our most robust predictors for each ohm, and then the clinical outcomes with the most interesting predictive models, which were circulating triglycerides, waist circumference, and weight loss. And so the way I started this process was I Googled graphical abstracts because I really wanted to see some good and bad examples. And I identified what I really liked about ones that were my favorite. And so the ones that really stuck with me were ones that had high quality graphics. They were sharp. They had nice color schemes. And so I could tell, I suspected that some were done in consultation with a professional team, but I could also see that really nice ones were also performed in PowerPoint. And, but that someone took a lot of time to design it thoughtfully. And the other thing that stuck out to me was having very little text and that I could easily follow and identify the primary findings of that manuscript. And that maybe it's even outside of my field of expertise, but I could still understand what their major findings were. And even if it was a very complex mechanism, again, I could follow what that mechanism was. And so the first author went through the same process. We decided to do it independently. She also Googled graphical abstracts. And then we challenged each other to each come up, conceptualize a design for our work. And so when we came together, I had pre-Googled some images that I thought were key, such as DNA methylation, metabolome, microbiome. But then I also did a Google search for, we were doing predictive modeling. So I Googled, on Google Images, I looked for images of prediction. I didn't know how to pictorially convey prediction. And so things came up like a crystal ball or a weather forecaster. Another one came up with a line graph that was on a puzzle piece. And so I just copied and pasted these images into PowerPoint. And then I shared these with my first author, Janet, and then like in an hour-long Zoom, we kind of created this very crude graph, but we wanted to highlight things like we liked the metabolite on the left. I liked the way that metabolite looked. The puzzle forecast really stuck with Janet, and so she really wanted a puzzle background with the final pieces being our omic predictors. And so we sketched this out, and some people may be able to sketch this out on paper. I could not. I didn't use PowerPoint. But we drew arrows, and we had sort of placeholders of how we saw things. And then we had a frank discussion of if either of us really had the time to make this look publishable, to really have this be a high quality graphical abstract. And the answer was no. So we made a decision to reach out to a professional team, which happened to be Jenny and Ramon. And we decided to have a consultation with them to better understand, you know, what they were able to do that was different than us doing it on our own, what their timeline was, what were the costs associated with them working with a professional team. And so instantly and before we had this consultation, we actually sent Ramon and Jenny this draft and we sent them our abstract and manuscript. So they had some background information and the journal provided the exact resolution and size they recommended graphical abstracts to be. So when we met with Ramon and Jenny, it became instantly aware that we should just use them as our professional team because we found out they can do rapid turnarounds or they can do, you know, longer turnarounds. We were wanting to submit our paper in the next 2 weeks and that worked with their timeline. And so after talking through our vision, I think a week later, I met with Jenny and Ramon for a second consultation. We made a few tweaks and they had provided some nice suggestions to the final product. And after those tweaks, I think 2 days later, we had our final product that we submitted with our manuscript. And I will note that a reviewer commented that our graphical abstract did a great job of summarizing our primary results. And so now Ramon can share the final graphical abstract that we submitted for publication. And then Jenny and Ramon can provide insights from the design point of view of what the process is like from their end.
Yeah, so as you can see, the key message is the same that was provided by Sarah during our first consultation, that is, that some predictors can reduce clinical outcomes, such as waste or weight. We work with them in a way that we can provide a very clean visuals for their outcomes and for the main findings of the paper. One thing that I will highlight here is that we ask them for color coding. So their graphs in the paper, they have this, so all the epigenome graphs are green, all the microbiome are teal, and the metabolome are blue. So we try to match that. And I think that came out very nice in terms of relating to the main manuscript and the figures in the main manuscript. But as you can see, the message is very clear, and that is something that people want in terms of graphical abstracts. We will give you some final guidelines, but for instance, one thing is like even though that there is some text here, every text is also accompanied by a certain visual clues like the metabolome, the microbiome, and epigenome, just because also you have to think that sometimes in certain journals, not everybody is going to be familiar with all the terms of that you are. So it's always good to have like some kind of text, just to keep it to the minimum. But Sarah, do you want to?
Sure. So we thought we'd make it simple for people to really identify their needs in designing a graphical abstract. So we made a decision tree. So I think one of the first key questions to ask is, do you have a clear design vision for your concept, your key findings, your key take-home message? If your answer is no, you might want to consult with the design team right away. If your answer is yes, like in my instance, my first author and I were able to conceptualize a design. So we didn't necessarily have to consult with a team. So then the next question is funding available? Because if there's not funding available, there are those free tools that you can use to create a very nice visual. If there is funding available, you can consider using the commercially available tools or consulting with a design team. In my case, even though I had a clear design vision, this was a time-sensitive ask. We were really trying to submit this paper right away. And so, you know, for us, it made sense to work with a design team. But if you are on a, you know, a tight timeline, you can consider those free tools or those commercially available tools if you have time to learn how to use them or you know someone who knows how to use them. That can be a great option as well. So these are recommended guidelines for authors. And as I think I've stated more than once now, it's really key that you identify your take-home messages because those are, I think, a great starting point to then move on to how to visually depict those. And so as I had shared, I discussed sort of this, what the take-home messages were with my co-authors. But you also may want to consider consulting with colleagues who aren't familiar with your work to see how the key messages really resonate with them. And the next step is really to think about how to visually depict this message. And so as I had shared, I used Google Images to just start it's sort of like brainstorming, like here's some images I really like, here's images. And I shared those with co-authors, or you could sketch that out. Or if you don't have a vision, maybe this is a great time to consult with a design team. Or maybe you have an artistic friend or family member that you can consult with as well. Or sometimes when I have really complex things that I'm wanting to see if it's understandable, like what that key take-home message is, sometimes I even just use my middle schooler or like my husband to see if I can share what my take-home messages are and if they're understandable.
Yeah, and other key points to consider are, especially for graphical abstracts, are use of simple shapes. Try to make simple shapes in a way that your message is gonna be conveyed. As I said before, try to match the color code of your manuscript. If you have color in your manuscript or in your graphs or in the tables, try to match those to in your graphical abstract. That will help the readers. Keep the text and words at the minimum. Don't overuse text, but sometimes it's needed, especially for concepts that are not easily conveyed by visuals. And one key point is to be mindful of the final size. We had some clients that have been that provided like a graphical abstract. We provided a graphical abstract for them. It was perfect. It looks great. But when the journal, the final size of the journal was very, very small, and that just complicated the readability of the whole abstract. So just be mindful of final size and use certain fonts that could be legible. We recommend using Arial as a standard, as a gold standard for fonts, but sometimes you want to use like some different fonts that are also legible, but they are not like the typical Arial font. If there is a design team available in your institutions, for instance, try to use that resource. If it will be very valuable for your final product. So I will say, use a design team wherever is available. And we have also some tips that Jen is gonna spread.
Well, this is one of my best and favorite examples, and a tip for every one of you is every time when you resize images or graph, if you already have one, it's like a standard for if you create your own figures or if you use like an image for internet, for example, every time you can do the correct way is press shift command in your keyboard and resize without like shrink it like the second example. So the graphic is going to be every time keep the same way you already designed, so that the letters, like the fonts, don't get like really stretched out. Or if your image is like just a picture for yourself, for example, if you don't use it, you're going to like shrink it. And every time it's like you're going to be really narrow path in your picture. So that's the best way to use that command. And it's really important to me. And I every time when I work with my clients, I say to them, it's like, if you use your images, you already have your project, so use that because it's really helpful.
Yeah, and another common mistake for people using, for instance, PowerPoint is to try to export to different formats, such as PDF files. So here I'm showing an example from Sarah that she exported this image, this PowerPoint slide, and you can see that it was all the text was completely the format was completely odd. So there's like a few tips that you can use. So try not to combine different programs. So PowerPoint and Microsoft Word are from one company, Adobe is from another company. They are not compatible. It's not going to be easy to work within those two different platforms. So try to keep like if you export instead of exporting, for instance, as PDF, try to print as PDF. That would be the best way to avoid any formatting problems. So so that's another mistake that people do. And I think that will be all from our side, and we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you so much to all of you. And we have had a fair number of questions rolling in here. So I'm going to jump right to it. And this is a question about specific programs and tools that are out there. So can you tell us anything about Unsplash or Pixabay? Are those familiar to you?
I never use those programs. So I don't know, it's like related to a specific like science world or general, like design.
Well, so then we'll move along.
let me just so most of the software that are free, they are of course like a open source and the code is open. So if you're like for instance we use for video Blender, which is an open source software, the way to approach those is to go on YouTube and just like learn how to use it, because there is no manual. Since these are open source, they change all the time because users can change the software and can modify it. So I will recommend like going to YouTube, going to Google, find tutorials and start learning. It will take like some time, but some of them have like a very common features. So it will be like a learning one will help you to learn the next one probably.
Thank you. That's a great tip. So the next question asks, how would you differentiate between a graphical abstract and an infographic? What are some of the differences across the two?
I can answer that. So in my opinion, a graphical abstract will be a very specific to a certain research. it will be based on the objectives of the work and also in the results, and it will have to have like a framework plus a findings and some kind of a discussion or conclusions. Whereas an infographic is more like a gathering information towards one big, I would say, like a meaning, right, from that information. So in terms of graphics and graphic design, I don't see any difference. You can have like a infographics that look like a very similar to a graphical abstract or the other way around. I like to have to use infographics to have the first draft of a graphical abstract, because the good thing about infographics is that they convey also a message. So I think like it's important to use any resource that you can. Look around. I love to, you know, maybe if you go to Nature Portfolio Twitter account, you can see like that they post like a graphical abstract all the time. So I will go there and find different ones. And also, you know, newspapers, they posted like a lot of infographics that can be useful for graphical abstracts as well. So I think like they're probably the message is a little different, the way that you set up the message, but in terms of graphicals and visuals, they might be very similar.
Yeah. Also, the infographics, it's like they spoke like by themselves. That's one of my kind of the difference I can see is graphical abstract always have like text, but sometimes in infographics you can use like just an image or like a vectorized image, and you don't use text, but you understand already what you can say in that specific figure. So yes, in my graphic design point, I every time I spoke with Ramon, it's like we use like sometimes the less is better sometimes. Mm-hmm. So if we use that kind of like mindset, every time your message is going to be more clear, like as infographic sometimes.
You've just spurred me to have another question. Can you articulate the difference between an icon, a vector, and a graphic? Like, I get confused and see those terms used interchangeably.
So what is the last one you mentioned? Is an icon a vector?
Focus on those two, the icon and the vector. I don't ever understand quite the difference between the two.
Well, an icon is more like a symbol you see. But vector, in my case, like design-wise language, is something you make to don't lose resolution, for example. That's kind of my simple answer.
So another question that we have is, it seems like when you're trying to come up with your idea, that you might need to go beyond what your keywords are and start searching for images as well. And do you have any particular tips for honing in on how to search for those images that can inspire you?
Well, every single time when I start a project, I do the same way to work with like in a agency or every time I do brainstorming. So I just get to the internet and look for the basic words. So for example, if I working for someone with lungs, but in a specific like related disease, so I just like work lungs, the disease, and then I match everything. Sometimes I just printed out some examples. So I put everything on the table and I see in my mind kind of, okay, I can use this part and I can use this other for the disease, for example. But that's kind of my way to do it. Every time I'm brainstorming with Ramon, every time it's because he knows the scientist's point. So sometimes for me, it's like hard to understand the language of the scientist, like because it's the specific, I don't know, a cell they call like this way. And it's like, okay, I know what a cell, but this is different. So what is that? So he pointed out every time so I can learn and use like that tool for make group graphics.
Also from a researcher point of view, I will say look for reviews. Sometimes they are very helpful, like reviews in your review articles in your particular research field will help you to have like an idea of how visualize certain problems or certain concepts. But again, like as Jenny said, like a Google images and find like something that will match what you are thinking about your research will also help. And then try to come up with your own way of depicting that idea.
And the only thing I'll add, Susan, is just that think of the words or concepts that are even hard for your mind to visualize. Like for me, how do I visually depict predictive modeling? And so that's where when I went to Google Images, there's so many things that came up. It helps spur sort of your creative juices just to see like hundreds of different images of prediction or forecast and see what came up.
So to paraphrase what I'm hearing from you all is, you know, it's really important for the writing team, the authors, to know what their key messages are and the key words. And you can maybe grab some of those keywords. I like the idea of going to other papers or reviews to see what they've designated as keywords or to bring those out. But then to take those and look in different kinds of, like it might be Google Images, it might be free icon and vector websites, put those keywords in there and see what comes up. And then you can proceed from there because those inspire you to figure out what visuals can go along with, you know, what you're thinking. So it's kind of getting it out of your brain and into a picture is what it sounds
yeah.
like. Okay. So we have a question that says, you know, in the examples that you presented, you had outcomes there, but do you ever include any words that suggest any kind of background or any kind of method that was used? How far can you go in the breadth of your content that you put into the visual?
I will say that if the method it's something that is not something that is unique and maybe something that people will not understand how you got the results that you observe, I will include the methods. Sometimes it's good to include like the model, like if you have like a rat or a mouse figure. And then you have a certain injection of something or treatment. Mm-hmm. It's good to include that as well. I will not go like a very in detail about like a methods or treatments or more as a way to show, okay, we use human tissue, but also mouse tissue, you mm-hmm. know, have like a depiction of a human of a mouse and then how that ended up in your final results. So I think like it has to be a balance, you know, like how much you want to highlight your methods, and not highlight your results or your final or your conclusions. It has to be a balance between the three, I guess.
Great. And again, in the example that you showed in your slide set, And actually, in my experience of working with you as well, it seems like there's a consistency of having three different columns or panels that end up in graphical abstracts. Am I noticing just what we've seen here, or is that a more general concept?
I think that might be a coincidence, but also I think like it has to be some kind of you want to keep your readers to follow what you want to
follow your message. Yeah.
So usually you read from the left to the right, right. So you want to keep that, or from top to bottom. So no matter what direction you put it, like in those two ways, just try to make sure that your readers are following the order that you want for them to read. But I guess like it could be more than three columns or more than three rows, depending on how many concepts or elements you have in the composition.
Okay, great. So I made that up, and that's not how it works. So a consistent question that's coming up in the questions is about how long a time is it reasonable to ask for turnaround in working with designers? So, you know, sometimes I'm sure that you get asked to do things on a very quick turnaround, but what's your ideal for how long you'd like to engage in this process?
I will say from the first consultation to the final product should be, the ideal will be 2 weeks.
Okay.
More than that would be better, of course, because you have more time to edits and to do comments or any change. We have done some work within a week as well, like a few days, I will say, which have been not the optimal, but and of course like that will increase your costs as well. So it's something to take into account. But you always want the team to have some time, at least a week or 10 days to develop your idea into a graphic design.
Yeah, because sometimes are like the scientists, they're not just one, for example, they're like three people over there. So they need to review every single one, the same, an image, for example. And sometimes the time frame they have is different each other. So sometimes we have that problem. It's like, yeah, I want my final product for, I don't know, 5 days, but they take 4 days to just combine all the reviews for the other authors. So we have just 1 day to make that corrections sometimes. So. But we did it.
That's a good point. You have to also have an idea of how easy it is to communicate with your co-authors or with the people that you want to edit your figure. So that's another thing that they have to take into account.
Okay. So then what would be your advice to authors about, okay, if they want to do a graphical abstract, when should they start thinking about that in the manuscript preparation? Ideally,
I will say when you are writing your abstract, you should have an idea of what your graphical abstract is going to be.
That's the first answer in my mind too, Ramon, was when you're writing abstract.
Sorry?
That was the same that came to my mind right away.
Yeah. Yeah, I think because when you are writing your abstract, you are combining all your manuscript and you're trying to summarize your manuscript into concepts in a few words, right? So I think like that is the point when you will start thinking, okay, how I can translate these words into something visual.
Yeah, I think that's really important for people to be thinking about is, you know, it's not a rush job that you add on to the end. It's a concept that you're working on as you're doing other parts of the manuscript. And so then, this is an interesting question. It's, you know, if you've thought forward into creating a way to work with design experts, how much time do you think it saves the author by working with a design team?
Whoa, I think Sarah knows the answer.
So when I showed you that graph and the first author and I did, you know, are discussing, you know, do we either of us have the bandwidth to do this? I thought it would take me at least 2 full work days. If not, I'm pretty perfectionistic. So I really thought to have it the quality that I would feel comfortable publishing, it was at least 2 to 3 full work days.
And that's you working by yourself, not circulating it.
No, it's just me spending time. I would have used PowerPoint and making, you know, not having it be all piecemeal and hodgepodge, but very cohesive. That's how long it would have taken me.
So by the time you've added in contributions from other people, you might be looking at 3 or 4 days to turn it around. But that's a lot of time. This is a great question. So if you're writing a grant and you want to include the cost of working with a designer in your grant, what's a good estimate to put in there per manuscript?
I will say for
on the spot a little bit, but it'd be nice to have, even if it's just an interval, a window that's like from this to this.
Yeah, I will say if you are planning to do like we do a lot of conceptual figures for grants or even for papers. So each paper will have like a 1 conceptual figure. If you calculate that, I would say like a usual budget between $500 and $1,000 per figure per manuscript.
And so I want to think about how to best ask this question. I'm going to ask the other one first. So if you're a reviewer on a manuscript and you're reviewing a grammatical abstract, what kind of feedback or what kind of things should you be thinking about as you're thinking from the reviewer point of view?
I think that's a good question, and I have yet to review a manuscript that had a graphical abstract. But I think back to those guidelines that we offer, like, were the take-home messages clearly depicted? Is it easy to follow? Did it enhance the text? Because if it confused me more and I looked at the graphical abstract and it didn't enhance my understanding of the overall study, I probably would provide that feedback to the authors.
I have reviewed graphical abstracts or articles with graphical abstracts, and one of my comments to the authors was that some of the figures or the concepts that were there, they weren't truly explained by the results. So just make sure that when you're showing conclusions similar to what you put in the discussion, that it has to be supported by your results.
And so that leads to another question that in the chat of, can you talk about the advantages of the graphical abstract compared to the traditional one? And from this person's point of view, who's not maybe as design oriented, you know, you have to think about the cost benefit of doing this. So there's quite a lot of effort put into the graphical abstract. And what does that do for you that the other one doesn't, from your point of view?
Well, I can share why, I chose to do a graphical abstract. It wasn't required by the journal I was submitting to. It was encouraged because they have found that typically, And the graphical abstract for this journal is only available for online versions, not for print versions of the journal. But readers automatically sort of get gravitated to that picture versus manuscripts that just have the title and author names. When you see that picture, especially if it's a nice graphical abstract, you're automatically curious to see. And if you like what you see, you're more likely to click on the full access to that article.
Also, just to add to that, many journals now they also share graphical abstracts in their social media platforms. Mm-hmm. So that will give you an additional exposure, I will say, to your work. So I think it's important. And also, I'm thinking about like not only for graphical abstract, but for conceptual figures. If you have your paper that has been it's going to be cited by someone, but if you have like a very very good figure, probably people will use that figure in their presentations. And you have seen we all have been using review articles figures from review articles to present our background or things like that. So think about if people will use your figures, right, to represent even not your own very focused research, but something broad.
So that links to another question that's currently here, and that's, if you work with a design team, is it appropriate or necessary to acknowledge them in the paper somewhere? Since this is a fee-for-service relationship, do you have attributions that come up in the acknowledgement, or is there some other way that teams are acknowledged?
That depends on the authors. We get sometimes knowledge because we have a very good relationship with our clients, and they say I would like to acknowledge you because they like the way that we did the job. So but that is not a requirement, or we don't ask for that. But it's a nice way to acknowledge, I guess, the nice work.
But the journals in general don't require it then?
They don't, no.
Okay. And so related to what you were saying about graphical abstracts, showing up in social media from time to time, where do they most often show up? Do they, in your experience, do they get aligned with the table of contents? Are they strictly in the manuscript? Where are the different kinds of locations that graphical abstracts can be out there to draw attention to your work?
I will say the table of contents, I think, contains links to the different abstracts. I'm not very sure about many journals, how they do it. They probably each journal has their own way to do it. Mm-hmm. But also, if you click in a specific article, it will show the graphical abstract first and then the written abstract below that. So I think that's the way that journals usually do. And in terms of social media, they post the picture of the graphic abstract with a small legend to what the study was about.
You lead me to my next question, and that's about the legend. Do you have words of wisdom about what should be in a legend, or should the graphic be able to just stand alone without a legend?
I think it should stand alone. I don't think that you can add any legends to the graphical abstract, to the best of my knowledge. So I think it has to be self-contained, and you have to have all the explanations or all the legends. If there is any legend, we did a graphical abstract that needed legends for different cell types. So we include that as a small legend, for the figure, similar to an infographic legend. But other than that, I would say we don't use much text.
Okay. We have time for one or two more questions if people have additional things that they'd like to throw into the chat. And I'll go to a more technical question that was asked earlier on. Is there a common recommended resolution or size for an abstract across journals?
For an abstract, 300 DPI is the is the one you need for an like that graphic abstract. But sometimes people like go 600, but that is going to be give you problems in the future if you use the same figure for example, for your PowerPoint. And it's really going to be really heavy. So it's going to take forever to read in that program if you want to present, for example. Yeah. But never use 72 from internet because your image is going to be really easy to read, but they don't look great.
Right.
And also in terms of format, journals give you guidelines for format and size. So you have to follow those specific formats.
So there's no common standard across in the publishing world that you're aware of?
No, each journal has their own guidelines.
Well, okay. I am going to take this opportunity to thank you all. Oh, I do have one more quick, what I think is a quick question. Actually, I'm going to leave it. I'm going to thank you all for being here and introducing us into what for many of us is kind of a wild and wonderful new concept about how to go about engaging people in reading our work. And I'm going to ask you if there are additional questions that filter in. You've given your contact information here. Are you comfortable with people reaching out to you to get a bit more information as they think about this?
Yes,
yeah, absolutely.
Terrific. Rachel, I'll hand it back to you then.
Yes, thank you all for an excellent presentation. Look forward to this possibly being a new feature for JNEB. Just a reminder, there'll be a short survey when I close the webinar, and your feedback is appreciated. Watch for a follow-up email later this week with a link to the recording, the handout slide, and your CEU certificate. And then, as I mentioned, this was the first webinar of the year. You can look on the SNEB website for upcoming webinars, including Spring Journal Club, which is focusing on research methods. We have 10 sessions scheduled. The first one is February. And I'll also put in a reminder that SNEB's annual conference this summer has an abstract deadline of a regular abstract deadline of February the 14th. We will have opportunities to present virtually as well as hopefully in person in Atlanta. So thank you again for attending and look forward to seeing you on a future webinar.
Thank you.
Thank you.